You are listening to the Create Podcast with Kristen Hagee and Natalie Roy.
Woo! Oh, friends. Thank you for still being here. We were trying to do a cute setup because we like to tell stories and be theatrical, but perhaps we went astray. But we know that we only learn from the chances we take.
I think it's all about our intention, not necessarily our execution. We should also mention that we've just had our coffee.
Yes, we've just finished a little coffee and a little dark chocolate, so we're wired for sound.
Anything could happen.
Friends, if you are new to the Create Podcast, thank you so much for being here. Create stands for Community Reclaiming Every Artist's True Expression, and we do believe that everyone is an artist. Every person on this planet comes from creative energy and is creative energy. Everything you do, every outfit you wear, every table you set, every conversation you have, every script you write, every song you sing, every shower you have is an act of creation.
Every outfit I wear?
Every last one, Kristen.
Yes!
So we want to talk to you about the creative process, creativity, what comes up, what goes down, and today we want to talk to you about this really incredible piece of writing that we found by the lovely, amazing, deep spiritual master Alan Watts. And he wrote a piece called Why Your Life Is Not a Journey. And so we wanted to start by sharing this piece of writing with you and then go in where we go.
We're just going to jam it out.
Jam it out. Here we go.
Existence is basically playful. There is no necessity for it whatsoever. It isn't going anywhere. That is to say, it doesn't have some destination that it ought to arrive at, but it is best understood by an analogy?
Analogy.
Ah, so close! An analogy with music.
Music is an art form, is essentially playful. We say you play the piano. We don't work the piano. Music differs from, say, travel. When you travel, you're trying to get somewhere. But in music, one doesn't make the end of the composition, the point of the composition. If that were so, the best conductors would be the ones who played the fastest. There would be composers who only wrote finales. People would go to concerts just to hear the crashing note, because that's the end. Same when dancing. You don't aim at a particular spot in the room that you should arrive at. The whole point of the dancing is the dance. But we don't see that as something brought out in our education and take it into our everyday conduct.
We've got a system of schooling that gives a completely different impression. It's all graded, and we put the child into the corridor of this kind of grade system with a, come on, kitty, kitty, kitty. And you join kindergarten, and that seems like a great thing, because after that, you get into first grade, and then that leads to second grade, and so on, and then you go to high school, and it's revving up. The thing is coming, then you're going to go to college, and by Jove, you get into graduate school, and when you're through going to graduate school, you go out and join the world.
And then you get into some racket where you're selling insurance, and then they've got a quota to make, and then you're going to make that, and then then all the time, the thing is coming. It's coming. It's coming. The great thing that you've been working for is coming. Then one day, you wake up, and you're about 40 years old, and you wake up and say, by God, I've arrived. I'm there. And you don't feel very different from what you've always felt. Look at the people who live to retire, to put those savings away. And then when they're 65, they don't have any energy left. They're not any more or less impotent. Impotent?
Mm-hmm. They are more or less.
They are more or less impotent, and they go and rot in a senior citizens' community.
And because we've simply cheated ourselves the whole way down the line, we thought about life with an analogy. Analogy!
Analogy!
Analogy! I had it right the first time! We thought about life with an analogy of a journey, with a pilgrimage, which had a serious purpose at the end. The purpose was to get to that end. Success, or maybe heaven after you're dead. But we've missed the point the whole way along. It was a musical thing, and we were supposed to sing or to dance while the music was being played.
We were supposed to sing or dance while the music was being played. How many of us, friends, are so busy living for the applause at the end of the music?
Yes, or the worry about tomorrow. I think of how often Jesus in the New Testament says, hey, don't worry about tomorrow, right? And we get so tied up in knots and anxiety because we think we need to worry about tomorrow in order to create some sort of intended end.
Right. So what we want to talk to you about today, friends, is the feeling of, as Gertrude Stein said, there's no there. There's no place we're all trying to get to. Yeah. The finish line here in this current manifestation that we are in this life form, in this physical form that we have taken, the finish line is a corpse. And so if we are rushing to get to that moment, we have actually missed the point of incarnating. And it is through going through the process of our journey that we are so changed by the contrast and the circumstances and the romances and the failures and the love and the joy and the miraculous that we experience that we become something at the end. So the end becomes about who we've become, not about the end itself.
Well, I love that this Alan Watts piece starts with existence is basically playful.
Yeah.
Like, I wish someone had told me that early on.
Yeah.
And I was telling you about, you know, one of the reasons this really resonates with me is because I was such a little overachiever in college. I felt such a need to put on so many credits, so many units, so I could get out of there as fast as possible. It was like I wanted to get all the way through college. And then get all the way through grad school so I could go out into the world and play. Like, I wanted to be a player. I wanted to create things, and I knew I wanted to create things. I wanted to get into the world and start, like, making it happen. But I was so focused on that destination that I didn't realize, like, I'm in college.
Missed it.
Like, you know? And it's so funny. I look back and I see so many of my friends who, like, did a year abroad or something like that. And I do remember, like, one of my favorite experiences in college was I took an art class for fun.
Right.
And it stays with me as, like, the most best time that I had because, like, I let myself just follow my charm.
Right.
Instead of, like, feeling like I need to hustle. And I remember I was a theater major, too. Like, I love an overambitious theater major. Like, it's kind of an oxymoron. But there's this Tennessee Williams I think it's in Summer and Smoke. It's a Tennessee Williams play where one of the characters says, the monosyllabic cry of the clock is loss, loss, loss. And I was like, oh, that feels so true. I felt like I was in a race with time at 19 years old, which is kind of ridiculous. Like, that is the sickness of our society.
Yeah.
They're telling you, like, you gotta hurry up.
Yeah.
And in trying to put our focus on hurrying up, we miss it.
We miss it. And there's actually also this study that's coming to mind as you're saying this, that they did this study with gentlemen in seminary school, and they separated them into two groups. And they told one group, lunch is at this certain time, and you must be there on time, and it would be deeply disrespectful if you didn't show up at that time. And they told the second group, lunch is at this time, we would really value if you were there at this time. If something happens, no big deal. As the two groups were going on their way to get their lunch, they actually placed, I believe if I'm getting the study correct, it was a disabled veteran who had fallen on the path on the way to lunch. And the people that were told they had to be a certain place at a certain time, these are people studying in seminary. These are like good-hearted humans who are here to do good in the world. Not one of them stopped because they had to be on time, and that was the value that they were upholding. Those that felt more flexibility with the time, all of them stopped. And so what the study went on to say is we are having this thesis that perhaps our values change when we are under the pressure of time.
Yes.
And I believe that we start to know this as we start feeling like time is running out. Mm-hmm. We start to make rasher decisions. We start to change who we are. We start to think in a different way when we think that there's no time on the clock. And so we end up ruling this master of time instead of the master of our own internal intuition and the experience of what is actually in alignment with us.
Well, I have one more story to tell now.
I can't wait.
So remember when I was doing Romeo and Michelle? Up in
Very
Seattle.
Well. It was the musical you made for me.
That's right. Some people do Hallmark cards. I make musicals for my best friend. We did not have a lot of time for a new musical. We had like 3 weeks in rehearsal, which is unheard of. And then we had like less than a week of tech. This is logically not enough time to do a new musical. And I remember talking with my cast and being like, help me with this. Let's all together let go of time. And just be in the room of creation. Because I know I could watch myself do one of two things. I could either completely forget about time, fall into creation mode, fall into fun, fall into play, and the perfect number would come through. The perfect blocking, the perfect creation of that scene would happen in the rehearsal room. If I got focused on, it's the end of the week, we should have Act Two done by now, and I clamp down on time, I'd be so focused on getting it done that there would be this tightness and this friction that would keep the actual right thing from happening. And what would happen is we'd have a scene that isn't that good or a number that isn't that good and have to go back and do it again.
Right, because it takes more time.
It takes more time.
It takes more time in the end to go back and correct.
So when we are in a rush to get somewhere, it actually makes it take longer.
And so it's fascinating if we think about this journey as we're either on this rush to get somewhere else or we're in this rush to achieve something else. But either way, we're not really being present to the music that's playing.
That's right. And Alan Watts tells us, it's not a marathon, it's a dance.
It's a dance. And so the question that we were asking is, because we've been so conditioned that there is this finish line, that there is a destination, that, you know, a life without goals is a life not worth living, that that's the point of why we're here, we wanted to ask the question, if there is no finish line, what does life look like? Mm. What do you do? And I think that what comes up is maybe there's some fear that I won't be purposeful or that I won't matter. Or that I won't have left my mark in the world, or it wouldn't have meant anything. But then the question is, why are you putting your meaning on what you can go after instead of who you already are?
Ooh, right. It's almost like that music, that dance is already in you, trying to come out.
It's already playing, mm-hmm. But we need the ears to hear. We need to stop. We need to slow down. We need to feel the movement in our bodies.
And then that dance, that music is going to take us somewhere.
And we don't have to know the steps. Mm-mm. The most beautiful dancing is not the perfectly choreographed kind that you execute perfectly. It's the one that comes from a place inside of you that emerges, that is a surprise, that is an improv, that's in the moment, that is something that wants to reveal itself to you.
Did you learn that perchance watching me in dance class?
I actually... Do you remember the moment when we were in dance class today? And it was early in the class and we were doing some move and it was a really simple move. And as soon as we added this arm movement to it,
it was
a weird scoop, like something. But there was a way that you were doing it that I couldn't take my eyes off you. I started laughing out loud in the class, in front of everyone in the class. I said, Kristen, you doing that dance move is everything I need in my life.
Can I tell you why? I felt like a member of NSYNC when I did it. It like reminded me of like, I was in 90s boy band heaven.
Yeah, and I felt it. So that's the thing. It had nothing to do with the move. It had to do with what the move inspired in you. And I, from across the room, got it. I felt it, and it brought me so much joy. And I really think it brought everyone in the class so much joy, but I always think that about you dancing.
Well, it's, you know, so you said this earlier, so I'm just going to quote you.
Please.
It's that life is going to give us different dance partners and give us different music throughout this whole journey.
Yeah, it's like, you know, I think about this with relationships all the time. If anyone thinks of an ex that they were with, then you found a rhythm together and you found a certain way that you moved through life together. You had your own dance. What happens when relationships end is often one partner will start stepping in a different way.
Yeah.
And the opportunity is either the other partner also steps that way and that also works for them. And you continue being in this relationship where you're both intuitively in the same dance.
Yes.
But what will happen for an ending of a relationship is one partner will follow the charm of what their new dance is, and the other person may say, well, that dance isn't mine.
Yeah.
And so we're no longer congruent as a couple. We're no longer dancing the same dance. So there's no need to have a story of suffering around that ending, because it's, if two people are honoring their own unique dance, then what we know is that the partner that you're in alignment with is already dancing their way to you.
Yeah.
But as long as you keep dancing your dance, if you try to go back and dance someone else's dance, if you feel like, well, that person didn't like that dance, so I better not do it, I better change what I'm doing, that's when we kind of stop that flow of energy towards us, because our dance partner can't find us.
That's right. And isn't it the most exciting thing about a new relationship? It's like, I've never danced this way before. You unlock a whole different genre of music that I didn't even know existed inside of me.
It's like hearing a new language for
the first
time. Or you know, we've all had that moment where you feel a way in your body that maybe you haven't felt before, or you moved in a certain way and you haven't moved that way before, and all of a sudden something gets alivened in you. That's why you and I have so much fun going to all kinds of different dance classes or pole dancing classes or whatever classes, because every time you move in a different way, even if it looks ridiculous, something new is getting revealed.
Yes, that's right. So if we give up this idea of life is this destination we're trying to reach, what then? What then can happen? And I love I love your story of what happened when you were waiting.
Yes.
Your waiting story.
Man, oh man. I mean, so many good things happen when you're waiting in retrospect.
Yes.
When you're in the waiting, it never feels like it's a good thing. But I remember I have been so intentional my whole life that I wanted to live in New York City, almost since I was a child, and I don't even know how I knew what New York City was. I grew up in like a 900 person town on the East Coast of Canada, and for some reason I was gonna move to New York and be a star. I don't know where that came from. But there was always this knowing, and I ended up moving to Toronto, pursuing my acting, pursuing my teaching, pursuing my artistic life. And I used to put an American dollar bill underneath my pillow where I slept at night. And I opened an American bank account because I knew, well, the day I move to New York, I'm going to need my bank account ready to roll. And I used to have New York apartments, like just these emails sent to me. So I was always looking, oh, well, if I did live in New York, that would be my apartment. Or that. And I was just every day looking at these emails, sleeping with my American dollar bill under my pillow. There was pictures of New York all over my apartment.
Watching Sex in the City.
Watching Sex in the City like it was my job, memorizing what restaurants I must go to, you know, and just without pressure, without gripping, just knowing it was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to happen. It's going to happen. I don't care when it happens. I just know that's what's going to happen. And so it was just so fun. I would literally have Sex in the City nights with my girlfriends when we would dress up as the characters and drink Cosmopolitans. Like, we were just creating New York. I was priming my environment with this city that I loved and felt so connected to. So enter Kristen Hange into the picture, and she ended up casting in Rock of Ages that she was doing in Toronto, my partner at the time, and It was so exciting and so fun, and I got to meet Kristen. We had the best time. And then the night I met Kristen, she said, I have plans for you, and it doesn't involve this country. And I thought, I don't know what that means, but I like her. Talk about a new dance partner coming into your life. So maybe a year later, my partner was moved down to the Broadway company, and the opportunity was, Natalie's going to get to move to New York. And it was like, I remember the phone call that came in, and I remember falling to my knees in the bedroom of my apartment thinking, it happened. I'm moving to New York. And I had to go teach a yoga class, and I didn't want to tell anyone because I was going to have to quit my job. And the guy that worked at the front desk, I pulled him aside. He was my beautiful friend, Daniel. And I said, we were in front of the ladies' bathroom. I said, I just have to tell you I'm moving to New York, but I can't tell anyone and I can't talk about it. I don't even know how I'm going to teach yoga right now. It was bliss. And we had 3 weeks to move. I sold every piece of furniture I owned. I packed up 2 suitcases full of clothes. I shipped about 10 boxes on some bus down to New York. I went to New York for 24 hours. I took a Greyhound bus to New York City. I had already been looking at all the real estate, so I knew exactly where I wanted to live. I knew exactly what I wanted. I knew exactly. So the moment I saw the apartment, I knew it was my apartment. I got it the same day, took the Greyhound bus back to Toronto. 2 weeks later, I took my 2 suitcases and I got on the Greyhound bus with my lemon Larabar and my bottle of water. And I sat on the Greyhound bus and I watched as we crossed the border and I saw the American flag. And I said, it happened. It happened. Out of nowhere and no way and no how, I am living in New York freaking city. By the time I had got the apartment and done all the things, I had $40 left in my bank account. And I had never been happier. And I took my $40 and I went to West Elm and I bought a pillow. Because that was more important than eating.
Yes.
And I had brought in one of my suitcases hangers. So the first thing I could do was just hang up my clothes in my closet. So I had one pillow and a closet full of clothes, and there I was, living in New York City. And I was in my bliss. And so all of a sudden I said, okay, now I'm going to apply for my green card, because I had a visa that allowed me to live in New York, but I couldn't work there. But I was like, whatever, it's just details. It's all going to work out because I'm moving to New York. And I felt so sure that I'm so following my inner compass of what is my dream and what's my purpose on this planet. It's all going to work out. It's all going to work out. I'm just going to go and it'll all work out. So I applied for my green card. I'm doing all the visualizations. I'm doing all the spiritual work. I'm pulling it in. I'm meditating every day. I'm living my best life. I'm in joy. I'm experiencing New York. I'm waiting and waiting and waiting. And after 9 months, they said, you've been denied.
Oh!
Now also, friends, it's very expensive to apply for a green card. So I had also gone into massive debt to make it happen. And I got denied. And so I said to my lawyer, well, now what do I do? And he said, well, we wait a year and we reapply. And in that moment, it's, well, I can't work. So I guess I have to go back to Canada. But that doesn't feel like the dream. Because I loved Canada, but this was the dream. And I thought, well, I just have to stick with the dream. And I thought, well, this is going to be the worst year of my life because there's no finish line. Yeah. I can't get anywhere. I can't do an audition. I can't meet a casting director. I can't do anything. I can't work. I can't make money. I just have to sit and let the debt pile up and wait. And wait. There's no finish line because I can't even enter the race. So friends, this is around the point where you start saying, divine, I thought we were in this together. And how dare you abandon me?
That's
why have you forsaken me?
That's it.
And this is around the point where it's like, well, I'm never doing any of that stuff again. Because it doesn't work. Now, whenever you take that firm of a stand of resistance, life will continue giving you a reflection back of tons and tons and tons of resistance to show you that that's not really who you are. So, of course, the bank account steadily got worse. I gained 20 pounds. Everything that could go wrong did.
Yeah.
You know, I got very sad. I was very lost. I signed up for an acting class. I thought, well, at least I can do that. And I just kept bombing. It was like all of a sudden I didn't know how to act anymore. I was just so bad at everything I tried to do. So I said, I surrender. And maybe this is the only year of my life I'm ever going to get to live in this city that I've wanted to live in. And the form looks different. I thought the dream was different. But what I manifested was being here. And now I am here. And so my job is to be in love with New York and stop being so mad at it. And so I put myself out there. I joined the Broadway softball team, and I was in like spring training for Broadway softball, and I was in my bliss. All of a sudden, I'm like, I'm an athlete, and I'm the star catcher of like the winning team of Broadway softball 3 years running. All of a sudden, I joined a theater company, and I had all these friends and fellow creatives, and we were getting together once a week and doing improv and doing scenes and playing and having fun. There was no casting directors. There was no auditions. There was no moving anything forward. We were playing. We were being friends. We were going out to diners. We were living in New York and being cool. And then the inspiration came in. Natalie, there's a book inside of you. I don't know how to write a book. I'm not an author, I'm not smart, and I'm mad at the universe, so like, what am I going to talk about? And I heard, clear as day, you're going to write the 30 most important lessons you've learned in your first 30 years on this planet, and you're going to start with what you're going through right now, and you're going to talk about it in terms of a lesson and not a punishment.
Ooh.
And I said, well, I'm not ready to write that chapter, and it said, okay, well, that can be chapter 30, but start at chapter 1. Huh? And I just started writing. And I spent 9 months writing, and I sat in my New York brownstone, and I woke up every day and had a beautiful coffee and walked in Central Park, and I wrote my story, and I went to museums on the days that it was free, and I bought more pillows when I could afford it, and I just lived in the absence of a finish line. And at the end of that time, as soon as the last page on that book was written and I sent it off into the ether, wouldn't you know, Natalie, you have been approved for your green card.
Oh, the universe knows what it's doing.
And it's not against us. I needed to have a crisis of faith because I had visualized exactly what I wanted, and I got it. And in my paradigm, that's not really possible. And so my faith had to crash for me to expand into, yes, it is.
I'm just going to, like, I just want to, like, give a standing ovation. I'm going to stand up even though no one can see me. That story is amazing, and the way that you tell it is amazing. And so inspiring. I mean, how many of us have had that idea of a dance we want to do or a destination that we want to get to, and then when we get there, felt like, this isn't what I wanted.
It's different. It looks different. It feels different. There's obstacles. I thought it was going to be Shangri-La over here. But there's no there there.
There's no there.
Whatever stuff I had in Toronto followed me to New York.
Well, isn't that interesting? You followed the muse to New York. But once you got to New York, there was a new muse you had to follow.
Right.
And it didn't start until the moment you said, I'm going to give up what I thought this was going to be and actually just look, where's the muse?
Where's
the muse? The muse is softball. The muse is this theater company. The muse is this book. And then that took you somewhere.
Exactly. And so this is a technique that I've been working with on my latest book. So now I'm writing book number 2. So that's why this is very full circle. And in the tagline of my book is Follow the Muse. And how I was thinking about that is the Alice in Wonderland of Follow the White Rabbit, that we as artists have Wonderland inside of us. We have access to this beautiful creative source energy, but we have to follow the muse, the artist, the creator, to go in. It's not about going out. It's not about getting something in the outer world. It's not about getting somewhere. It's not about losing 10 pounds. It's not about getting enough followers. It's not about, you know, getting your script made. It's about going in. And when you go in, you play, you explore, you dance with the muse inside of you. And as you dance, the world shifts.
Oh, I mean, now I'm going to give a second standing ovation. I'm following the muse inside of me that just wants to stand and clap for you all the time.
You're such a good wife to me.
Well, it's so funny, you know, because there are so many things that we follow in life instead of following the muse.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
We are constantly abandoning the muse within to follow other things.
Absolutely. We love to follow, we actually made a cute list. We love to follow money.
Obligation.
Responsibility.
Unworthiness.
Self-deprecation.
False perception.
Apathy or depression.
Taking care of others.
Addiction.
Distraction.
And ultimately, all of those things are an expression of following the victim.
Following the victim story. And you even talk about that in your story of New York, that once you got into New York, you were like, no, God, this isn't how it's supposed to happen.
How dare you?
How dare you do
this to
me? I took
this big leap of faith.
Yes.
I spent every dollar I own. I had faith 20 billion times bigger than a mustard seed. And I moved here. And what the F?
What the F? Oh, man. And we are so well-intentioned. Sometimes we wake up one morning realizing we've been following the victim story.
Yeah.
And didn't even realize
Yeah.
that we got into it.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, what Natalie and I realized earlier today is that we can't dance with the victim and the muse at the same time.
Mm.
So our job then is to get our dance card so full of the muse and all the dances we're dancing with the muse that the victim can't cut in.
Yes,
there's
right?
no room for the victim.
There's no room. Your dance card is full. You are busy.
Yeah. I'm sorry, baby. I'm dancing with this sexy
right. It's
man
almost
all night.
Like if you had the like. I think of the scene in It's a Wonderful Life, and like Mary wants to dance with
yes.
Jimmy Stewart, and he like comes over, and he's tall, and he's dashing, and he's swirling her around. It's like if you're dancing with Jimmy Stewart, and then like someone that you do not want to dance with is like trying to cut in.
Yeah.
It's like, why do we give permission? Why do we think we're not allowed to keep dancing where we want to dance?
That's right. And the muse, when we dance with the muse, it's going to take us somewhere that we don't even know where we're going to go. Right? In that movie, when she dances with Jimmy Stewart, don't they end up like falling into the pool?
They fall into the pool.
Right. It takes them somewhere totally unexpected.
But them falling in the pool was then the muse taking them so that they had to go back and get cleaned up and have a moment and get all romantic.
And that's when he says all the stuff about the moon and he's going to lasso it for you.
Yeah. So the muse has a journey, but it's not linear.
Mm-mm.
And it's not attached to form.
Mm-mm.
In psychology, there's this saying that the only thing that matters is matter. And it's this feeling of we have gotten to a place where the only thing that matters to us is how much money is in the bank, how many achievements we have, what people think about us. And we have to start saying what actually matters to me is pleasure and purpose. And when we have that balance of pleasure and purpose, and I can dance with my pleasure. I can dance with my purpose. I can dance with the music that is playing as it's revealing itself to me now. I can be willing to let myself fall in the pool and let someone say they'll lasso the moon for me. That can only happen when we're not busy trying to control and attach to form and matter.
Well, A Course in Miracles says it all the time, that we get so focused on the form, we get so attached to form, as opposed to connecting to the energy, right?
Yeah.
And that connecting to the form actually puts us in this kind of death, because it's solid and it's fixed and it's static and energy is constantly moving.
And form is already manifest. And if we want to play with the real power, we actually want to dance with what is unmanifest, because what is unmanifest is infinite, unlimited possibility. So rather than dancing with the form of just what is, then you're limiting yourself to just that. There is way more exciting ways to move your body than just how it's been done before.
Oh, I want to move my body in ways that it's never
yes,
been moved before.
Yes, you do. You know what? One thing that we were talking about is there's no right time. There's only right now.
Yeah.
There's only right now. And we keep having this idea, as Alan Watts said, of, well, once I get to this grade,
yeah,
well, once I do this thing, well, once I hit the quota, well, once I get married, well, once I have the kids, well, once I get this much in the bank account, once I do this, once I retire, once upon a time is neither in the present. It's either in the past or in the future.
Well, that was like a sweet little Kristen Henge in school being like, once I get out of college, then I can go be creative and, like, do all my dreams, as opposed to, why don't I do my dreams right now?
Yeah, today.
Why don't I be creative right now?
Today.
And then when I got in that art class, I felt so expressed. I felt so in the moment. I had a wonderful love affair with a hot artist in that class.
All the wonderful love affairs happen when you're not watching.
Right? Because you're so busy following the muse.
Yeah. But the muse knows where they are.
They know.
So you're going to follow her, and she is going to take you within their eyesight.
That's right. It's going to take you on a wild ride, and Jimmy Stewart might
she
be right there.
She is a saucy lover.
So, you know, I find this with people, in working with creativity, is they have an idea of when they can start to choose to do why they were put on the planet.
Right.
Right? So, at this point, then I'll do what I'm here to do. Or, well, I can't really yet, but this summer I will, blah, blah, blah.
Or I don't have time in my schedule to sit down and write, but, like, if I set aside a week later, then
I'll
do it.
Or I leave town for a month, then I'll do it.
Right.
And that purpose and pleasure is not something to be delayed or put off.
It's not something to plan.
It's not something to plan.
Imagine, friends, we talk about this often, the pleasure of sex.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine if you gave your partner a list of the moves and the choreography and how it's going to go and you had it all planned out? Do you think anyone's going to get anywhere?
Do you think that's going to be any fun?
No.
You will start in the missionary position. And then 5 minutes into it, you will
exactly, 5:02.
You'll turn me around and take me from behind. I'm sorry, I followed my muse.
I love your muse. I love your muse. She's so saucy.
She's the sauciest.
But it's the thing that we want to understand is that whenever we say, in the same way, I'll be happy when I get somewhere, is how we say, well, I will practice my pleasure and I will practice my purpose once certain conditions move around. Friends, the space for pleasure and purpose opens through practice.
That's right.
And so the only way to get better at something, to get more mastery at something, to have more absorption with something, as the yogis say, is to be in practice with it. Patanjali famously said, do your practice and all is coming. It is coming, but it will not come if you do not do your practice, because your practice is the thing that allows it to come.
This just dropped in. If you don't feel like you're living your potential on the planet, it's because you are not in the practice of your purpose and your pleasure.
Ah, no, so I felt standing ovation for you.
I felt a drop in.
That's it. That's it.
Yeah.
It's a practice. You know, I joke with my clients who want to make change. And I say, well, change happens in your habits that then become ritual.
Yes.
And so, for example, many of us have the ritual of brushing our teeth every day. Yeah. So the practice is brushing your teeth. The result, the place you get, is clean, healthy teeth.
Yeah.
You can't say, well, I really want clean, healthy teeth and not have the practice in place that's going to allow for that to come.
Well, it's so funny because I think sometimes when people hear the word practice or they feel to hear the word habits, right? They just want to go habits,
or they think obligation, something to do.
Or they think practice. They think like, oh, my mom made me practice the piano.
Yeah.
So it's tied to something that was obligation.
That feels like work.
Right. That puts them like in their victim story.
Yeah.
And so I think what we want to do is release people and say, what if you started thinking about habit as a dirty word?
Ooh.
What if practice was a little taboo?
Raunchy rituals.
Raunchy rituals. Trademark it right now, Natalie Roy. Trademark it right now.
Oh, raunchy rituals of the rich and famous.
Well, because if what we're talking about is following that muse, that thing, the muse who knows how to take you to purpose and pleasure, if that's like going to Wonderland, that's like tripping your balls off.
Yeah.
That's like, I get to go to the secret places inside of myself.
Yeah.
And so I'm making a raunchy ritual out of going somewhere no one's ever been before. Take me.
Take me.
Show me.
And it can look anywhere. It can look like you just admiring your body in the
mm-hmm.
mirror. That could be a beautiful raunchy ritual that could allow you to have more self-love in your life.
That's
to have more
right.
acceptance.
You know, I like to whisper sweet nothings to myself in the mirror.
Right, to practice loving what is instead of what could be. I'm not going to love myself when I lose the 10 pounds. I'm going to practice loving myself right now as an act of rebellion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as a ritual that I'm going to honor.
Yes. And, you know, muse can show up as curiosity. Brian Grazer wrote a whole book. The producer who works with all of Ron Howard's movies wrote this whole book on curiosity and saying his whole career was built off of following curiosity,
yeah.
right? So when Alice follows that white rabbit, she's really following curiosity. She's saying, what's that and where's it going?
Yeah.
So can we be brave enough to watch what we are curious about, what we get turned on by,
yes.
those things that make us go, there's something interesting there.
Something's happening.
There's a door I've never opened.
Yeah. There's actually this amazing quote from Alice in Wonderland. But I don't want to go among the mad people, Alice remarked. Oh, you can't help that, said the cat. We're all mad here. I'm mad. You're mad? How do you know I'm mad? Said Alice. You must be, said the cat, or you wouldn't have come here.
Oh.
And we came here. We incarnated people. We took a body. We are pure consciousness. We are a soul. We are a seat of knowing and awareness. We don't have to be here. We don't have to be in this body. But we chose to come here because we're all a little mad.
Yes.
And we wanted to experience, taste, smell, touch, life. And when we are so busy trying to get to some destination, we miss the whole damn thing.
The dance of the madness.
The dance of the madness. Hangy love.
Well, that's why being normal feels so ugh. Like, why you want to, like, take off your skin and just throw it.
Run around.
When you are forced to be like other people. Because we came here for madness.
Yeah.
We all want permission to invoke our inner madness and to let it fly. We want to be freaks.
Yeah, we want to dance our own dance that has never been expressed before in the way that it can be expressed through us.
That's right.
And we all, as the yogis say, we have a certain amount of life force, prana, energy in our body. And every breath we take in and release, there it goes.
Do you know what I know? That when we are using our life force in the direction of our purpose or our pleasure, it gives life force back to us.
That's right.
When we are using our life force for the victim, right. It depletes.
Well, don't you think some of the greats, Michael Beckwith, Louise yes. Hay, as they get older, they look younger and have way more energy.
Yes. Right?
The people that are activating this in their life are getting younger.
It's the secret of youth.
It's the secret. It's yeah. the elixir of life.
That's it.
Is dancing with muse, dancing with your purpose, dancing with your pleasure, dancing with permission, dancing with your sexuality, dancing with your desire, dancing with your authentic expression.
That's it.
However it shows up.
All I know is I have the deepest desire to pour a can of paint on myself right now and flick my hair around a canvas.
Well, now that's my desire.
Well, that's what we're doing tonight.
That's what we're doing. If you want to join us, friends, that's what we are doing tonight. So we want to just wrap this up for you with this beautiful quote by Alexandra Ely, who says, "The sun will rise and set regardless. What we choose to do with the light while it's here is up to us. Journey wisely."
Oh.
The music only plays for so long. The sun is only here for so long. There's only so much breath in our body. Journey wisely.
And if you have been hanging with us for a minute, you know that we are doing 100 Days of Joy.
Hashtag 100 Days of Joy.
100 Days of Joy.
100 Days of Joy.
100 Days of Joy.
Joy!
You may have seen our cute music video. You may have seen...
If you haven't, you must.
This is the time.
This is the time.
You may have seen us on Insta with our hashtags, Living Our Joyous Lives. And because spring has sprung and we are ready to cut loose, we are dubbing May... the month of the muse.
That's right, friends. So we, in concordance, is that the right way to say
yes. it? Yes.
In concordance with our 100 Days of Joy, we're going to activate the month of May, because May is the dawning, the bringing in of spring. It's a very potent time to manifest and bring in fresh energy. And so we want to claim the month of May as the month of the muse. And we want to know, when you do your hashtag 100 Days of Joy, how are you following the muse?
Yes.
How is it activating you? Yes. What are you saying yes to that you've never said yes to before? What dance are you dancing? What brave step in a direction are you taking? What dance class are you taking that you always wanted to take? I, friends, am learning French. I'm learning French for the first time. It's a crazy thing, but man, how exciting to start to hear words come out of my mouth that I've never said before, right? So whatever it looks like for you, are you cooking a new recipe? Are you going to a new place? Are you planning a trip? Are you showing up to be spontaneous, walk down another side of the street, smile at a stranger, give money away? How are you making this the month of the muse?
And can you imagine if for an entire month, you didn't put money, obligation, responsibility, self-deprecation, taking care of others, distraction as the thing that was leading you? If you weren't following those things, if your story wasn't about, I don't have enough time, I don't have enough money, why is this happening to me? If for 1 month you said, I am following the muse, mm-hmm. I'm not following anything else, I'm not following other people's expectations of me. I'm following my muse. So come here, muse. Whisper to me. Take me on a wild adventure.
Dance with me.
Let's see what happens.
So we invite you, we invoke you to travel to Wonderland. Tell us. Come to the Create Community Facebook page. Tell us what you're discovering. Tell us about the madness. Show us who the Mad Hatter in your life is. The Cheshire Cat. Let's see all the colors, all the wonder, all the awe, all the curiosity that comes out of your experience.
And speaking of traveling.
Friends.
Do you know where we're going? I think
Italia.
You do. We are going to Italy.
Oh,
we are going to Rome.
We're going to Rome. Oh, we are going to an ancient, spiritual, beautiful, pleasure-packed land to eat pasta, to drink wine, to celebrate pleasure. So if you taking on 100 Days of Joy or the Month of the Muse, or just if you have no idea why, but your charm is saying, I want to go to Italy, come to Italy with us. We're going to Italy with our beautiful best friend, John DeVisi. We are teaching pleasure in Italy, and we are going to look at where you can activate pleasure in your life on the daily, not just something you can do while you're away on vacation, but how we can give you the tools to manifest this in your life every single day.
And if you've been playing around with 100 Days of Joy and you start playing around with the month of the Muse and you start to notice some stuff come up, you start to play in brand new territory and you're like, oh, I'm noticing where my limitations are, or I'm noticing where my ceiling is, or I notice where like my courage runs up. Yes, we know. We understand. So not only are we going to explore pleasure, we're going to look at where we have taken certain pleasures off limits and why we did it, and what opening up to those places in our life, where that might take us.
Mm.
And we might throw some coins in the fountain and make a wish.
I'm sure we will.
We might buy a beautiful dress and take pictures on a bridge.
We probably will do that too.
And think of all the gelato.
And the dancing in the square with the pigeons.
Oh, I see. I have a muse. I want you in this beautiful red dress.
Yes.
Surrounded by pigeons.
Yes.
With your hair like floating up. And like, yes, maybe like there's a white scarf coming off your neck.
Okay, we'll do all that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
So friends, we hope that you will join us in Italy. You can check out our website, thecreateseries.com, and we'll have a link there that will take you to our Pleasure Around the World page, where you can pay your deposit, you can hold your space. There is very limited spacing, so if it's something you're thinking about, follow the muse. It could be a great time. Is there anything else we want to say?
I think that's everything.
I think that's the bliss. If this is before May 5th, we are going to the Arvada Center for the Arts and Humanities,
mm-hmm,
May the 5th, 12 p.m. to 5 p.m. We're doing a day-long workshop on the path to your dreams. So if you want to go deeper into the journey of manifesting something, if you have an idea, a charm, if you just want to come just outside of Denver to hang out with us, if you're in that part of the world, we're not in that part of the world very often, so we would so love to hang with you. Spacing is limited on that guy too, so if you are interested, you can go to the Arvada Center and sign up and find us. We'd love to see you.
We would love to see you, and we'd love to meet your muse.
Thank you for listening. Thank you for being who you are on the planet. Thank you for dancing your dance and dreaming your dream and being exactly, exactly who you were born to be.
And where you are, that's perfect. If you want to know about the Create Workshop Series, you can go to
www.thecreateseries.com.
And if you want to know more about us, you can go to kristenhenge.com or
natalieroy.com.
And if you want to come to Create, you can go to
the Actors Green Room in New York City. And it is Sunday nights from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. and Tuesdays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m.
And their website is www.theactorsgreenroom.com. And you can buy Create on demand if you don't live in New York City.
Woohoo!